Good morning. We'll call the Property and Local Taxes Division to order. And we have a fairly tight agenda today, and we're going to start with House File 2786, which is Representative Swedzinski. And I think that maybe it'd serve us well to have just a brief background from Ms. Dalton describing what we're looking at here in terms of this bill. And we want to be done with this by 9 o'clock, so we're going to ask folks who are here to testify, and I know there's a number of folks from around the state. So if you'd kind of limit it to 2 minutes, and we want to really march right through. So, and we will be voting at the end here on each city. Ms. Dalton?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, what House File 2786 deals with is it forgives LGA penalties for cities who did not timely file their reports and financial data with the state auditor. In 1983, a law was passed that basically said that cities must meet the state auditor's deadlines and requirements for filing in order to get their LGA. There are a couple of opportunities for a city to get it. There's a first deadline, and if the city has not filed by June 30th, their July 15th payment is withheld. If they file by a second deadline, they will get their July 15th payment along with their December 26th payment. However, if they don't meet that second deadline, they normally do not get their payment at all. Although occasionally with cities with extremely unusual circumstances, the auditor has authorized the release of the payments before the end of the fiscal year in which the payments are made, so they might get their payments in June of the following year. There is a memo in your packets from me that on page 2 actually shows the number of cities that have missed those payments over the years, to give you an idea of whether 2011 is unusual, and yes, 2011 was unusual. 18 cities permanently lost their LGA.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Dalton. Representative Swedzinski, why don't you, I think you brought this to our attention. Thank you for bringing the bill, and let's hear your presentation.
Madam Chair, I believe, is there an amendment in the packet? You guys want to go ahead and take care of that? Or?
Right, I'll move House File 2786. Okay, I think we're going to actually hold on the amendment till the very end. And we do have a list of cities. I don't know if we want to just prepare that right now, but Vesta, Villard, Dalton, Lake Henry, Bluffton, Hoffman, Jeffers, Elysian, McGregor, Nelson, Big Fork, Bovee, Biscay, and Henriette. So,
Madam Chair, all right. House File 2786 requires the Department of Revenue to pay calendar year 2011 LGA payments to the cities that had their payments withheld because of the cities that did not meet the filing standards and guidelines established by the Office of the State Auditor for filing financial reports. Current law requires meeting those guidelines in order to receive LGA. We kind of have a list in front of us as far as the cities that have not received payment, and I would just ask that we could bring. I do have one letter from a city that was not able to make it that I'll quick read. Just a short piece of paper here. This is from the city of McGregor. I don't believe there are representatives from this. Just in case someone did show up this morning. And this is just what I received as a member. Good morning, representatives. At this time, I apologize for not being able to attend today's hearing for House File 2786. For the past several days, I have attempted to discover why the City of McGregor was not able to supply the necessary information to receive their local government aid or have a representative to attend today's hearing. At this point, I have called the mayor, traded emails with the city clerk, and attempted to contact other city council members and staff from the City of McGregor. I have received no response. Without that necessary information, it would be inappropriate for me to address this committee. Aiken County has had a long, positive working relationship with the City of McGregor, City Council, and staff. I can only imagine that an event of significant proportions occurred for the city not to submit the necessary requirements to receive their LGA. This letter was submitted by Patrick Weslow, who is the Aiken County Administrator. We were trying to contact the City of McGregor just to simply do some sort of discovery, and the City Administrator was unable also to contact anyone from the city or even have them reply to them. So as far as the committee, I just wanted to put that forward. That was sent to me. So with that, I believe we have Representative...
VESTA, then?
Yeah.
Representative? Okay.
Yep. So.
Good morning, and please introduce yourself for the record and tell us who you represent.
Yes. My name is Lynn Krause. I am a council member for the City of VESTA.
Good morning, and proceed,
morning,
please.
Thank you. Thank you for hearing our testimony today. The situation that led us to this position has sort of a long history. 2010 started with significant turnover in both council, mayor, and city employees. A new mayor took office in 2011 and served for 1 year before he resigned due to health issues. At that time, our current mayor, Ellie Bounty, took the position. And through these turnovers in mayor, we also had significant turnover in council. Also, along with the council turnover between the years of 2010 and 2012, the city hired a new city clerk, two liquor store managers, and a new city auditor. Throughout the timeline of our 2010 audit, specific events during that time that led us to this position were, first of all, in June of 2011, our audit needed to be extended due to grants we received and liquor store discrepancies. At that time, our auditor asked for an extension from the state auditor's office, which was granted to them verbally. The city did not receive written confirmation of that extension, but through conversations with the state auditor's office, it was granted. The city received letters on August 25th and September 15th, letting us know of the September 30th deadline for our extended audit. The August 25th letter was forwarded to the council. However, the September 15th letter was addressed to our mayor having the health issues, and so that information was not forwarded to council or the city auditor. The city council made the incorrect assumption that our city auditor was given the same information as those letters provided to us through their conversations they had verbally with the state auditor's office. And therefore, we failed to forward the correspondence. So that was a miscommunication on our part that we take full responsibility for. Finally, the final item that led us to this position was our audit was finished and approved by our council on September 27th. However, when our city auditor attempted to access the submission site on September 28th, our passwords failed for reasons unknown. And there was a weekend in there, and in recreating passwords, forwarding them from the city to the city auditor, our audit missed the deadline. Our audit was received by the state on October 5th, which is 5 days past deadline. After receiving this penalty and loss of LGA, our city has taken corrective actions to be sure that this never happens again, and we maintain proper communication between ourselves and our governing agency's lawyer and city auditor. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Krause. Are there questions? All right. Seeing none, then we'll move on to the next one, and
that
will be Villard.
Good morning,
Senator Anderson.
I'm here for on behalf of two towns.
And please introduce yourself and who you're representing today.
Madam Chair, my name is Paul Anderson, Representative Anderson, and representing the towns of Villard and Lake Henry in my district.
Okay, you want to give us their story, please?
Very quickly, Madam Chair, again, these are small towns, populations 500 or less. They have part-time mayor, council members, and changing of staff, things like that. In the case of Villard, they had done a project, a major sewer project in 2008, and got a loan from USDA Rural Development, and as a result, their audit became much more full-blown. And their 2009 audit cost them about $9,000, which is a big expense for a city of that size. So they decided to switch auditors the following year and try to get it done cheaper. And it was simply a lack of communication with this new auditor, thinking that he was going to get it done, and it wasn't done. I've been assured now that their audit is being completed this week. They'll have it submitted by Friday. Again, in Lake Henry, an even smaller town than Villard, about 200 people population, they've had a lot of turnover, clerk, council members, mayor. In fact, I had a difficult time contacting the current officers in Lake Henry. And again, they've been in contact with their auditor and will have their report submitted by the end of the week. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. Any questions? So you're saying both have submitted theirs or are to do that this week?
They will be having theirs in this week, yes.
Okay. All right, any questions? All right, thanks, Representative Anderson. Next, move on to Dalton. Representative Nornes, good morning.
Good morning. I'm Bud Nornes, representative from District 10A, and Dalton is part of my district. Dalton is a small community near Fergus Falls. I talked with the city treasurer on two occasions just in the last couple of days. The last time was last evening, trying to find an answer to why they're on the list here and why they've not received their payment. They did receive the first half, and in talking with the treasurer, who is a former banker and has been the treasurer for some time, who I believe wouldn't let something slide that's as important as about $20,000 is. So I don't have any explanation other than some paperwork being overlooked. As I talked with him, he actually was expecting the check any day. So he was not aware that he was on a no payment list. So I didn't talk to any of the councilmen, I didn't talk to the mayor, but I do know the treasurer very well, and I thought he would be the best source of information. So I don't have a real compelling story to give you except that they received half and they were expecting the second half any day, and we're not very alarmed at this point until I called them. So
All right, any questions?
They can certainly use the money.
Okay. I guess what we maybe would like a little more input, if Jason Nord is here, would you be willing to come forward and just speak to whether this is, you know, this is a recurring kind of a problem in each of these cities? Okay, right. If you'll just stay at the witness stand.
Sure. Madam Chair, Jason Nord, State Program Director with the Department of Revenue. There are, I believe, 10 cities on this list that have had, looking back through the last 8 years, that have been late at least more than once. Some have even had their payments withheld before. So I don't know if you want to know the list or what years they've been late, but...
why don't you give us the list, yeah, Mr. Sure. Nord?
Sure. This is a new issue for Big Fork. It's a repetitive issue several times for Biscay. It's a new issue for Bluffton. Bovee has been late three times before. Dalton, Denison, Echo, and Elysian are all new to this issue. Henriette has been late three times before. Hoffman, late twice before. Holland, late four times before. It's new for Jeffers. Lake Henry has been late three times before. Manhattan Beach, late five times before. McGregor, five times before. Nelson, twice before. It's new for Vesta, and Villard has been late once before.
All right, thank you. I'm sorry, you said Villard was new? Villard was new?
Villard has been late once before.
Wait, okay. Okay, you probably don't need to remain at the witness stand, but thank you, Mr. Nord. All right, we have Bluffton next.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. I'm sorry, Representative Detmer, question?
Yeah, Madam Chair, just maybe we could get filled in on exactly how many times have these cities been contacted by maybe by the state auditor's office, and maybe the process that the state auditor goes through to contact these cities? Maybe just a quick input there.
Ms. Dalton, just is there a timeline and a process?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, you also have in your packet a letter from the state auditor's office. I'm looking for my copy of it. But my understanding is that there are several contacts between the first deadline. Cities have to either file by March 30th or June 30th. That's their original filing date. If they ask for an extension, my understanding is they're automatically granted one. So if they're asked for an extension, they get their July payment even though they have not filed. September 30th is the second deadline. My understanding from conversations with State Auditor Otto is that not only is the city financial manager contacted, but also the city mayor is contacted at least once in the process. So there are multiple letters that do go out, but there are also some cities, as Mr. Nord has pointed out, who are chronically late on these, and they are chronically getting these letters and pushing the envelope.
Okay, Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know as a legislator, I have received copies of these letters, and some are for Fire Relief Association also. So I know I'll give clerks a call and so forth, even though I know I had a city a couple years ago that did not receive this and lost, I forget how many, because of a bad clerk or whatever, but they didn't get any money back, I know. I mean, I tried with the revenue department, and the budget was already closed. But I think legislators, I think we receive these letters, too, or copies of some of these.
To that point, Ms. Dalton?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Marquardt is correct. That is the other thing that State Auditor Otto did mention to me, is that when they send that September 15th letter out to the mayor, they also send out the letter to both the House and Senate members for that district. But yes, there is a problem, particularly with smaller cities, that people don't always pick up their mail on a regular basis.
Right. Okay, no further questions, and we'll move on to Bluffton.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. State Representative Mark Murdoch, District 10B. Little town of Bluffton sends their apologies. Their problems over the last few years are stemming from their CPA doing the audit that just wasn't getting the job done on time. And they've since replaced that CPA with a new one. And I've talked with the mayor and the city clerk, and they should have all the information that they need to complete their audit to the new auditor by the end of this week, which is coming up right quick. The previous auditor excuse me, was late in filing the extension, so that was a problem. I do believe they received their first half payment, and they're hoping to get their second half payment, which they really need. So I guess, with that, again, they apologize for being late, but they have taken the proper steps to fix this. They are part-time people. They're not full-time in this little town of about 150 folks. And that's pretty much it. We just hope this bill passes and we can get these towns the money that they need.
Any questions of Representative Murdoch? All right, thanks, Representative.
Okay, thank you.
Moving on to Bovey. I'm sorry. Hoffman, sorry. Is Hoffman here? Okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
And please introduce yourself for the record and tell us where you're from.
I'm Pat Lawson. I'm the City Administrator Clerk for the City of Hoffman. And I just want to let you know that we did not ignore any regulations or do any wrongdoing. Our auditor, we provided him the information and the documentation that is required, and we figured that our professional people, we rely on them to submit our documentation. I gave you a handout saying that the council received the letter from our auditor in June. Our auditor told us that everything was sent in July or in August. So So we relied on all that information, and I did not receive any notices from the state auditor's office, nor any calls. I did try and follow up in January, February, March, trying to find out why we had not got it. And the only way I found out that our money was being forfeited was through our senator called and said that you were having this hearing today. If we do not get this money, it'll be very devastating for our community. I think it'll impact like public safety and economic development, and we're already relying on our staff. We've cut them so far back that we'll be volunteering because we just don't have the money. So I'm just asking you to consider giving us our local government aid. Our audit was, the second part of it was submitted, and I don't know if it was a computer glitch or what, but it was submitted on March 19th when we found out this was happening.
Okay, thank you. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Ms. Lawson, is your auditor contracted out or part of the city?
No, he's contracted out.
And according to Mr. Nord, looked like Hoffman in at least the past 10 years have been late a couple times. I mean, is this the same auditor?
No,
or?
We end up that
Ms. Lawson.
I thought we were only, excuse me.
Oh. You should go through the chair.
Madam Chair, we were late, like, and I had just started there. I thought we were only late one time, and that was we had a different auditor, and they kept stalling us with it and said they had other things to do with school district. And so we did not get ours in that time, but we kept telling our auditor we were going to dock him from our fees because we were going to possibly lose our local government aid. And we did end up that year, but I did not get any notice at that time that we were going to lose it. But we did receive it like the following year. We did receive it in like in June.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Lawson. All right. Any other questions then? If not, we will move on to
thank you.
Jeffers. City of Jeffers. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please identify yourself for the record. Tell us who you represent.
My name is Brad Prinz. I'm the mayor of Jeffers. We have the same problem as a lot of other people here. Back in 2009, we hired a new city clerk. And in 2010, we had several different projects going on. We revamped our city sewer ponds, and we also had a main street that was redone with county state aid dollars. There was a lot of paperwork involved. It was a little overwhelming for the city clerk. We're only a town of 369, very small, and big projects like this don't happen very often. Our state audit or our accountant was taking care of all the business, and I conversed with him several times, and he said everything was going along, and it got too close to that September 30th deadline, and he assured me there was no problem. He would get an extension, and there was no problems, and all of a sudden, after the first of the year, we realized that we're not getting our government aid. So this has never happened to us before, and we were pretty excited. It's that's a lot of money for a small town. And
Mr. Mayor, what's the status of the report now, today?
The audit's been done, and it was late. I think it was either late December or early January before it got finished. But it is done, and there was one form that he was supposed to, he was supposed to submit a form and the system would not let him in. He called the Office of the State Auditor and spoke with Tiffany and explained it to her. She tried and also she could not access it. So I don't know which form they're talking about.
I understand we've got a memo here, financial reporting form. For Jeffers, I'm not sure exactly what that is.
Yeah, I don't know either. But
so it sounds like some systems issues, perhaps.
It could be, yes.
Okay. Other questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you for your time.
And Elysian? Is Elysian here? All right. Nelson? Good morning, sir. Please identify yourself for the record.
I'm Jerry Gay, the mayor of Nelson.
Good morning, Mr. Gay. Please proceed. Yes, please tell us your situation.
Okay. I wasn't aware of this particular thing until last night when my representative called me up and told me to be down here this morning at 8:30.
My goodness. Okay.
Anyway, I tried to go to hold the clerk. I couldn't get a hold of her. But we had an audit last year, and it went way into this year. That was a five-year audit. And I was told that we couldn't submit this situation until the audit was over with. Okay, and the audit just was completed. But we've been late in the past, and I'm aware of it now. But I try to keep up on these things, but sometimes I don't get the mail. It's my fault. You know, I'll take the blame for everything because I should pay attention a little better than I do.
Well, Mr. Mayor, the committee didn't know about Nelson until yesterday either.
Yeah. And I'm just talking from the cuff because I don't have any, you know. All I did was went to bed after the ball game and got up and ran like a son of a gun to get here.
Okay.
You must be a
chick. Mayor Gay, what is your population in Nelson?
Right around 150.
150, yeah. Okay.
Everybody's part-time.
Everyone's part-time, and you've had a variety of different CPAs, auditors, that sort of thing, too?
Yes. This is why I was told that I questioned it, okay? And I was told that she was told that she couldn't submit it until the five-year audit was over. Okay? This is what I was told. And that's all I know.
I don't know if we have anything to offer in terms of background on five-year audits or... Ms. Dalton?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my understanding is that for small, very small cities, they only have to do an actual formal audit every 5 years, but they still must submit their financial data every year.
Okay. All right. Representative Barrett.
Madam Chair, thank you to the testifier. Who is your state rep? I'm curious who did such a good job last night to call you up.
That young lady back there, Mary.
Representative Franson.
Raise your hand, Mary. There you go.
Very good. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Do you have anything else to add then, Mayor Gay?
No, not really. I suppose we need the money, but then again, on the other hand, I understand where you're coming from, too. You know? And I was just repeating what I was told.
Right. Yeah. It does sound like communications are a problem.
Lack of communication, yeah.
Okay. All right, thank you.
You bet.
Big Fork. Representative Ansel. Okay, I understand you have a couple of them then, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Tom Ansels, District 3A. I want to thank the author of the bill. I'm here on behalf of two communities, Big Fork, population 300. This is the first incidence of not being able to get their material in on time. And Bovee, population 600. Bovee, unfortunately, has had a history of late filings. The good news is, in both cases, these communities have now finally contracted with other communities, so that I'm really confident that this won't happen in the future. Big Fork has contracted with Cohasset, and Bovee has contracted with Grand Rapids. In both cases, quite candidly, I'd have to say incompetence and lack of communication between clerks and mayors and city councils. No excuses, but I'm really confident going forward that this will not happen again. I ask for your consideration.
Representative, can you want to just describe what the contract arrangement is? Is that you're sharing financial employees, or how does that work?
Madam Chair, in the case of Bovee, the monthly financial statements will be prepared by the clerk in the city of Grand Rapids, and then the year-end financial reporting to the state auditor will be the same. In the case of Cohasset, it's only the year-end financial statement and the submission of forms to the state auditor that will be provided. In both cases, the communities are paying a fee to have these financial statements prepared by the other city.
Okay, very good. Any questions? Representative Barrett?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anzels. Bovee apparently receives $251,000. What's their city budget each year?
Madam Chair and Representative Barrett, I believe the split between LGA and local levy is about 50-50. Okay. The levy is about the same as the LGA. So this would be a horrible hit to the citizens of that community if they didn't get their LGA.
Representative Anzell, it's a horrible hit, but that's a lot of money. Why wouldn't they do things on time? It seems like with such a important situation, they would be more responsible. Is that money probably could be used for other purposes?
Madam Chair and Representative Barrett, I think the same could be said for every community that's here before you this morning.
All right. Any questions? All right. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Next, we have Biscay. Okay. Good morning, sir. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. My name is Ray Urban, Mayor of Biscay, Minnesota.
Welcome, Mr. Mayor.
It goes back to the problem. I just got elected the last term because I'm on my second term in office here now. Last year, they came. Our audit was due in June. Our CPA was doing an audit. It went through June, and they weren't quite completed yet with the information and correct and stuff. So it was put in late. I talked to the city clerk about it. For this one coming up here now, we haven't paid our last year's CPA audit yet. We're in the process of paying monthly on that to get next year's done, and I was concerned about. This year's coming up, so I called the state auditor, and they says as long as we get this year's information in by March 30th, we can get it in place there. So I talked to one of the last council meeting. I talked to the councilman and the city clerk, and they were completely unaware of the due date of the March 30th last year. Yes. So now the problem has been corrected. Hopefully. We will not have this issue no more.
Okay. Any questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Urban. And Henriette, the last one.
Morning, Madam Chair. Roger Crawford, 8B. City of Henriette has a population of 71 people. With me today is the mayor. He'll speak for himself, but I think in order to put this in perspective, you know, most of the people that serve, they get very little pay. They're very dedicated, and you know, there are other things they're doing in their life besides being mayor. So, Mr. Van Huysen.
Sir, do you want to introduce yourself for the record?
Paul Van Huysen, mayor of Henriette. Thank you for having us down here to kind of talk about the problem that we have before us. Henriette, like Roger said, is a town of 71 people. We're all part-time, and in the process of going through some of this applications and working for the try to get the LGA, my treasurer, we just had a meeting again last night. We've been meeting on this pretty regular. She informed me that she, for 2011, that she had corresponded with the auditor's office quite a bit. Some of the documents that I have here have dates back into for the 2010 LGA. We have one in October, we have one in May, and another one in October. These are correspondence that she had throughout the year, and we never really got informed that we were not getting it, and she felt that we had pretty much done our job as far as trying to get any communication and filing done. Like I say, it's a very important part of our need for the city. We have a budget of about $25,000, and I guess about $10,000 of it would be what our LGA would be. My treasurer also kind of indicated that part of our problem is some of the technology that's needed to kind of file some of the forms. I know we're trying to get on the CTAS form. I believe that's what they wanted for it. But we haven't out there in Henriette. We don't have high-speed internet, so it's kind of, I guess, the CTAS doesn't work real well with it. We're working on a kind of a part-time high-speed thing that's not guaranteed, but we're trying to get it in, something you plug into a computer. I do not know anything about computers, so forgive me if I don't speak intelligent computer language here. But the treasurer is saying that we're working on modernizing. But, I mean, that takes time and takes money, and then especially when you're in a community that doesn't have the high-speed internet. So that's basically
okay, Mr. Mayor. And now the report, it will be filed in the next week, or what?
I believe.
Has been, or?
I believe has been, yes.
That has been.
Has been, yes.
Okay. Okay, any questions? All right. Thank you then, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much.
All right, we're going to officially call the meeting to order,
okay. And
we have a quorum. Let's see, Representative Lemire moves the minutes of the previous meeting. Are there any discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion passes. All right, now we'll move the bill, House File 2786, and we've heard all the testimony. And we do have the amendment H2786A2. And if you all have that, what we're going to do is go through each city and name them one by one. And so if you are, let's see, Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and I appreciate this hearing. You know, I heard three primary things. I mean, this is a tough one. But I heard three primary things as the testifiers came up on why these reports were not done: a lack of communication, incompetence, and a lack of knowledge of state requirements. Those, I think, are kind of the three main areas. And I do think it brings in a big question here. We've got a balance between the state getting some very, very important information and also residents in those communities getting this information, or at least making sure that the city's providing this important information, versus what you heard in most cases. We're dealing with part-time people, who part-time council members, part, you know, it's because they're cities that are very small. You know, so where's the balance? I can see the problem on both. I guess my suggestion here is that we do none of them, or we set a deadline that all of them get them in by a certain time, and then we can do that. I just hate to pick and choose. I see some are past the fenders, but you know, we haven't dealt with this before, and I just think we just deny all of them, or we provide some sort of a deadline. And then also, in looking ahead to the future, you know, I know the League of Minnesota Cities and others really need to deal with this issue, because the question is, if in fact these cities, I mean, this might just be the tip of the iceberg. If you're not getting in important forms, and some of them still haven't turned them in, and it's 15 months after the January 1st, that might be very indicative of other problems. that we don't know about, which is impacting citizens in these cities. Now, I've got a lot of small cities, and I understand their part-time staff and all of this, but I'm wondering if there isn't something League of Minnesota Cities or others could take this on. And I know there's always the first-time workshops for first-time councilmen. Now, some of them might not be able to bear the cost in these cities to do that or find the time, but maybe the LMC could waive or work or actually go out to these communities and meet some outreach. Because I do think the lack of knowledge of some of the state requirements is a legitimate one. It's tough. I know you're supposed to know that when you're elected, but there's a lot of things, those are my thoughts. This is really a tough one. I really hate to pick and choose on each one. And I guess maybe there's some other members here that have viewpoints, but I guess I'm either going to vote all no or vote all yes if we could set a deadline to get all of those in this time, then look ahead to the future. And I don't know what the plan would be for that.
Representative Susinski.
Madam Chair, I would like to agree with Representative Markwart, and I think I would argue to the line of not voting no, but potentially just setting a date. I know when we're dealing with a lot of the small cities and towns in my neighborhood, looking at finding councilmen's finding mayors, people to run, oftentimes there is no one running, and the person that wins is written in, and they didn't even know about it till the next morning. And, that's really, indicative of public service, and, I think we all realize the pressures that it can bring state representatives in this room, but also on the cities, small cities and towns. And we're all, dealing with issues. We all have barking neighbors. We all have all these things going on, and sometimes, finding those folks. And so I think, I agree with Representative Markwart in encouraging the League of Minnesota Cities and other organizations that represent cities across the state that maybe there is some bridges we can build and just the knowledge gap that it potentially appears to exist.
Right. Representative, I think we may have a suggested amendment here to the amendment, all right, that would allow us to extend the deadline by which these cities have to all meet the deadline in order to receive their June payment. So the and I'll just read it. So after Villard, insert, provided the state auditor certifies that all forms for calendar year 2010 are in by May 31st, 2012. Okay, great. Anyone? Is there a discussion on that? Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm just throwing this out there. Obviously, you have deadlines for a reason, and you want to incent people to get things done on time. Is there anything that we could do maybe that would add language that says if you've had an exception made in the last X number of years that you can't get another exception, so that way we don't have a parade of people, every other year when they have a turmoil at their city government. I don't know if the committee wants to talk about that or think about that. I feel like this could happen every biennium, and there ought to be some catch that would prevent that from happening.
Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also have a thought on this as well. I think rather than maybe not pay them and on the opposite side just extend a deadline, we got cities like McGregor who can't even return a phone call, and yet we're allowing them another grace period when they've already had one. They haven't acknowledged anything. They haven't talked. Apparently, they haven't talked to anyone. Then you got places like Bovee, $251,000 is half their budget, and incompetence is the reason. I mean, aren't we kind of furthering incompetence if we just extend the deadline? I might offer a suggestion of just limiting the amount. Maybe just allowing payments up to a certain amount, $50,000, $70,000, anything above that, they have to come and actually have someone here representing their city to ask for more money. They didn't even bother showing up. Bovee didn't. $251,000, half their budget, don't even show up to ask us and explain why they're not... why they couldn't fill out a form. So I would offer that as an idea to limit the amount of payment to each of the cities to a certain small amount. We can forgive small amounts, but $250,000, that's a lot of money.
We do have an amendment we're looking at, and did I move the amendment? The verbal? Okay, I've moved the verbal amendment, which would take the whole group and extend the deadline I mean, to some extent, I agree that the issues are technical, the issues are communications, the issues are sort of myriad. I'm pleased that Bovee and Big Fork have addressed their issue by contracting out the responsibility. I think that that's a big move in the right direction. So I guess I would prefer to move ahead with the group and extending the deadline. So is there any discussion on that? Ms. Schill.
Madam Chair and members, before you agree to the amendment, I have a technical correction on line 1.5, so when you are ready for that.
Okay, we'll take that up after we pass this amendment. Any discussion then on the amendment as amended?
Madam Chair.
To the amendment. The amendment to the amendment, I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, this needs to be done before you pass the amendment.
We're not there yet.
Okay.
Okay. Any discussion then? Okay. Representative Mahoney.
I apologize for coming late, but I knew this was coming and I should have gotten here earlier, but is there a definition of deadline or penalty somewhere that we could kind of have read to us so we understand that we're like giving up both of those?
Representative, Madam we have Chair. Sort of gone through the scenario, the timeline.
Madam Chair,
deadlines.
I'm being more facetious than anything,
okay.
But I think I agree with to Representative to the idea of you know, what's the penalty? What's a deadline? It's a deadline is basically how many legislators you have that'll vote with you, and a penalty. You can't just penalize $250,000 and say if you're just so small you don't get, we're not going to punish you, or hold you accountable. I guess that's a better way of phrasing it. There's something wrong here when a half a dozen or a dozen or even more cities miss the deadlines, even after they've been extended. So I'm kind of in the same category as Representative Marquardt. Something's wrong here. Something's desperately wrong here that these small cities can't do this. And rather than put Band-Aids on stuff and set really dangerous precedents of extending deadlines and extending deadlines and extending deadlines, I think there should just be a category. We should just vote this down and direct our agencies to actually work better with these people or something, because I wholeheartedly agree with Representative Marquardt, and I think I'll have to either vote yes on everything or vote no on everything, and I'm inclined to vote no on everything.
Representative Dietrich?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering if in this amendment, if May 31st comes and we find ourselves in a similar situation, then what happens? Is everybody really clear as to the action that will be taken? And will it be clear and cut, or will it be, like Representative Mahoney suggested, another request for an extension of deadlines type of thing, and more reasons why they can't meet the requirements?
Ms. Dalton?
Madam Chair, Representative Dietrich, I think the language would be very clear that if all the reforms were not in by May 31st, that the penalties that have currently been imposed, which is they don't get their 2011 LGA, they would not get it.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Benson?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I represent three large cities. We haven't had this issue, but I grew up next to a little town of 99 people. I think it's down to about 40 now. And, you know, the experience I remember is that in these little towns, lots of times, you can't get anybody to serve. They have so few resources. And it seems to me that if we come up with the deadline here and it's clearly understood, that there's not going to be any additional extensions or any way for these communities to get out of it. It seems that, you know, we've gone far enough. We have to take some understanding of what's happening in these little towns, too. Many of them are practically dying off, and it's a very bad situation for them. So, you know, I don't want to sound like a softie here, but it seems like, you know, if we set a deadline, and it's very clear to them that this is it, there's no coming back, we've done, I think, a reasonable job. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Seeing no further discussion on the amendment to the amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Amendment prevails. Motion prevails. And now the amendment itself. And Ms. Schill, did you have?
Yes, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, I checked this morning through the state accounting system for the amount of money that is available to be canceled to pay for this. And that amount, instead of, and I'm talking about line 1.5 of the amendment, A2, it says up to $795,000. That number should read $794,597.
$794,597.
That is the remaining balance in the account, and we can't exceed that amount.
Okay, I'll accept that as a friendly amendment. Okay, thank you. Got that noted. All right, any further discussion then on the amendment? Okay, seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
A2 amendment prevails. Thank you. And now we have the bill. All right, so any discussion on the bill itself?
Madam Chair.
As amended. Yes, sir. Representative Markwart.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate that amendment you offered. I think somehow the signal does need to go out that we do have a problem here that somehow has to be addressed, as other members have mentioned, either through the, the various city coalitions and so forth, but we need to deal with this problem somehow also, so that there isn't the idea that people can just come back and get extensions. I know that's a big concern here, so I don't know exactly what the answer is, but somehow, some way should be noted that this is, you know, intended to be a one-time thing, and hopefully we can solve these problems.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would hope that the Association of Small Cities, maybe the Association of the League of Minnesota Cities and the Township Association might be able to get together and see if maybe we need some discussion about either shared services for the smallest of the cities, or maybe some training and guidance on how a small city can become a township, because that might be much more manageable for some of these communities. I think we need to have graceful ways for places that are too small to manage themselves to get to a point where it's okay.
Thank you. All right. The chair renews her motion that House File 2786 be passed as amended, be passed and referred to taxes. Any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. Now we're on to House File 1954. Representative Downey. Now, members, we've had some really lengthy discussion on the bill previously. So, Representative Downey, do you have sort of further information for us?
Madam Chair and members, 1954, we heard quite a few weeks ago, and we had good discussion. And I know coming into this committee, we actually accommodated a request from the local governments to provide a little bit of relief on the future year reporting. And for those of you who might not remember the purpose of this bill in terms of a transparency of local government reporting, we were going to require a summary page of spending by program area and expenditure type across a four-year period. And in the original bill, that four-year period included a future estimate for the upcoming year, budget year for that local unit of government. And the challenge for those folks is that in September and October, which is the reporting period of the bill, it's difficult to maybe project your next year's spending. So we actually had a compromise position in the bill as it came to you, and that's reflected on page 6, line 27 through 32. And Madam Chair, subsequent to that amendment being made, I think coming into this committee, I've agreed. We've had numerous discussions, and I've agreed with the local units of government that we would change that four-year reporting period to be the current budget year plus the three previous, and to not ask them to report on the upcoming projected estimate. And, Madam Chair, I was not able to get the amendment prepared in advance of this committee, but you have my commitment to do that before it would go from, I think it goes from here to taxes and then over to state government finance. My commitment to do that, and I know there's some other discussion from local units of government representatives that they might have some other ideas, and I'm glad to continue working with them on other ideas as well to make this as palatable as possible.
All right, first of all, the chair is going to move House File 1954, and we do have an amendment, the A3 amendment, and Representative Markwart, did you want to offer that?
Sure, yes. Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I do have an amendment that I did talk with the author about, and members, I am in support of the concept. I really think, as I've looked at a lot of these city reports, that there needs to be more data that is more meaningful to people. And I think, you know, focusing on labor costs is, we know that's a huge factor, and I think that's important. And but what I'm concerned about is that it's not showing things in context, in that we're only showing one side of the ledger of what drives property taxes, and really to give you an overall picture of what I think is really important to citizens. Why are their property taxes where they're at? And so what this would do, this amendment, would add some other data that would, I think, give it a more accurate picture. And so what the A3 amendment does is that it would also, for these 4 years that's required in the bill, also put the change in population, the change in tax capacity from 1 year to the next, the inflation that is in the works, and then also, which is the implicit price deflator usually used for government consumption, and then also list any specific state actions that would cause changes in revenues, such as aid or credit reimbursement, or a state action that would require a change in expenditure, such as a mandate or elimination of something. And so I just, I know this adds a little more, but I think if you're truly trying to get at transparency and what really drives property taxes, you can't just look at the expenditure side. You also have to look at the revenue side. And you know, I know there's a lot of folks out there that think, God, you're focusing on the labor part. I don't see that as a problem at all, because what people are going to see is that in a city, 50% of your costs maybe are labor. And if you look at the police department, my experience was labor is probably about 75 to 80%. If you get to a volunteer fire department, it might be down to 30% because volunteer and most of it's in equipment. So people might look at that. And so one thing I don't have in this, but I'd also like to see, is actually a delay in the reporting for 1 year so that the state auditor, whoever, could get a comparison. So you could look at cities and see the average is 51%. Because I could see some residents looking at initially, boy, 50-some percent is in labor. And they might think, you know, when they see the squad car responding to emergency, it's really the officer responding, not the squad car. Where you see the front-end loader plowing snow, it's not the front-end loader removing the snow, it's the operator. Or, you know, it's people that provide the services, even though people tend to see buildings and equipment. And so I just think the context here with this amendment would make it a little easier and would actually more accurately and in a more transparent way explain how actually city finances work and the impact on property taxes. So, and like
the amendment, Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Markwart. I appreciate the effort here. I mean that sincerely. The idea of transparency and educating the public on these local government budgeting and tax issues is important, and that's obviously the intention of my bill as well. I have a couple of concerns. I'm going to probably urge members to vote no on the amendment, although maybe some further discussion would be warranted, but in my mind, there frankly would be no end to the list of things that you could possibly add to your amendment. And frankly, the purpose of the bill is not to continue adding to the current pile of 180 pages of reporting or whatever it might be in your local government area. It's not to add to that, it's to actually just put one nice crisp summary of how the spending is organized and what the trends are over the last couple of years. And so thinking about, you know, trying to ask every jurisdiction to publish their change in population, the change in tax capacity, the implicit price deflator, frankly, I think that's a very poor measure of inflation. It basically says, well, because government spending has been going up, government spending needs to keep going up. So I don't think that's the right measure. Number one, state actions. Who would provide the summary of state law changes? You'd have to add federal in there probably, too. Anyway, I just think I appreciate the intent, and I would welcome any local unit of government putting this kind of information into their truth in taxation hearing materials or their existing budget booklets. I think a lot of this stuff actually does come up in the narrative sections of city government budget documents, but it really, I think, kind of adds too much and frankly confuses the purpose of my bill in the first place. And you also mentioned the comparison factor, and I know that keeps coming up, comparing one city to another, one county to another. And members, the intent of this bill is for citizens to see their own unit of government over a period of time. So the comparison is not necessarily, the purpose of the bill is not to create all these comparisons one jurisdiction to another. It's to look at your own jurisdiction over a period of time and understand the changes. So I guess I'd welcome discussion on Representative Marquardt's amendment, but would urge a no vote on it.
Any discussion? Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and I appreciate those comments, Representative Downey. You know, one thing that's not in here at all is the quality of the service. You know, all of those numbers, even the ones that I'm asking to have in this amendment, doesn't tell the person anything if you can't compare it to the quality you're getting. And I know we're kind of getting that somewhat with the voluntary program where they can, you know, they've got 10 indicators on the counties and the cities. But, for example, the old saying is, what gets measured gets done, what gets compared gets improved. And I think that, you know, if you could look at two police departments in the state and look at the percent that they're spending per capita, whatever, and then if you had some sort of measurement that looked at value or the quality of the service, you'd be able to actually look at cities and say, why are they getting this type of quality at this type of price versus, and that's where you're really going to see kind of the improvement. And so we don't have that. Neither you nor I are suggesting that in here. I just think, you know, the population numbers and the tax capacity numbers are very simple to get. I mean, even every year when the LMC prints that one booklet, they've got the changes. And so that wouldn't be a big deal. And I still think, you know, what the state does has an impact, especially on revenues that may or may not, I don't want to get in this argument, but may or may not show what the revenues are that may affect property taxes. And I just think with this, with your approach, you're only looking at expenditures, which is only one half of the puzzle. So I still would ask members to support the amendment.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. I support the amendment, but I don't think it goes, you know, in some ways far enough, and that my concern about this bill is it really does focus primarily on expenditures and not impact, and doesn't really give, I mean, we switched most local governments and switched to program budgeting, you know, probably 30 years ago in terms of just really giving that information about impact and those sorts of things. And this doesn't affect just cities. A lot of times in this committee we focus a lot on cities, but it's the counties as well. And if you don't have information about caseload, you really can't put the numbers in context. Almost all counties throughout the state are dealing with, because of the recession, record growth in caseloads because people are, you know, applying for food support when they can't meet their bills because unemployment is less than half of what they took home and they've got to put most of that into the mortgage payment or those sorts of things. And so without some kind of information about the programmatic changes, in a city you don't have as much, it doesn't have go up and down as much with the economy, because you have the same number of streets to plow, you have, you know, the same number of houses to protect from fire or public safety issues. But clearly with county services, if you don't have any information about what's going on in terms of federal and state requirements and changes in serving people, you know, we pass a 400-page Health and Human Services bill every other year that has a lot of policy changes in, and the caseloads, you don't, the public will not have anything in which to understand the context of this report. And so I think Representative Markowitz on the right direction in terms of giving us some additional information, but I don't think it goes far enough in terms of the public being able to understand what's going on for the amount of work that we're asking of them.
Any other discussion? Right, seeing none, then all in favor of the Markowitz amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign?
No.
No. Does not prevail. All right, Representative Downey, anything else then on the bill? Representative Mahoney?
Madam Chair, I have a verbal amendment on page 7, line 26. After the period, insert, if you miss a deadline, you can apply and will receive an 18-month extension.
Is that rhetorical also?
No. We'll take a voice vote on that one. 18 months.
All right. Any discussion on the amendment?
Just, I don't think everyone was entirely paying attention. So let me repeat the amendment here.
Okay.
On page 7, line 26, after the period, if you miss the deadline, you can apply and will receive an 18-month extension.
Okay, any discussion?
No offense to your bill.
All right, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. No. Does not prevail. All right, thank you. Representative Barrett?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Downey, can I ask you a question about a certain line in the bill? 6.35. And 6.36, we talk about information required, but then we exempt certain types of funds, special revenue funds, specifically used for the acquisition and construction of major capital facilities. If I could read you a line from the board minutes in my county, in which they actually took their whole government county program, made $1.5 million, and they took it off budget, and they used it for a particular type of purchase. And I want to know if that would be included in the amount of information that they are required to report, because I'd like it to be, or if they would be somehow exempt because of this line that talks about capital projects. They permanently transfer $850,000 from the general fund to the capital equipment fund and dedicate it for the phase 1 and 2 MICS projects approved 720. $700,000. So that's a source of contention, I think, for many people in my county, because nobody knew that that happened. Nobody knew that they used $1.5 million in county program aid for a purpose other than their normal budget. And I want to see if we can get that in the light of day. So I'm wondering if that section actually allows them to continue to not report that.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Barrett, that's a great point. The intention, if you look at the list of revenue funds that are included, it does include the general fund and their debt service funds and special revenue funds. I think what we were trying to exclude was those funds that are perhaps service funds or other subsidiary funds, so we weren't kind of double counting the expenditures. And I think if I could, Madam Chair, I'd like to work with you offline and maybe look at that specific circumstance and see if somehow that type of thing happening is an exception that we haven't accurately captured here in the bill, but certainly it would be to increase the transparency and exposure of those things. So if somehow that movement of money out of the general fund would not show up as an expenditure in this, you may actually have hit on an isolated case where we need to make a change. I don't know, maybe staff could answer that off the top of their head, but I'm glad to work with you on it between now and the next committee.
Thank you, Representative.
And members, all right, yep, and we do want to vote on this before 9:30. Representative Coonan, I think, was next.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Downey, I appreciate the bill and, you know, your goal towards transparency. But to Representative Mahoney's point, I wonder, too, if we're starting to pile on too much. We just dealt with Representative Swazdinski's bill and cities not getting the reporting done that's required now, and now we're asking for even more work by city staff. So I just wanted to raise that concern. I'm kind of wondering if we're piling on a little bit too much. I see that the bill excludes cities under 2,500, and that's good, I think, the limited staffs. But some cities over 2,500 also have some of the same issues that those smaller cities have also. But I just wanted to bring that up. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Benson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question for the author of the bill. In order to make this bill work, or this law, if it becomes law, does the bill require communities to use the same process of reporting and the same standard? Don't we have to have what we would call apples to apples comparisons? And aren't there communities and county governments that use various methods to report? And if that is something that is required for people to understand the significance of the reporting, then are we not instituting a unfunded mandate on these communities?
I'm going to ask Ms. Dalton if you had wanted to insert a comment here.
Madam Chair, representatives, all cities over 2,500 have to use GASB and they have to use modified accrual. So they're all using the same accounting standards right now.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Representative Loeffler, briefly.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'm wondering if you would be willing to ask for a local impact fiscal note on this. I believe that the fiscal chairs are the ones authorized to do that. And just to understand what the potential impact of this might be, I'm not sure of what the impact might be, but it would be useful information before we finally act on it.
All right, Representative Loeffler, there is a fiscal note coming, and this bill is a local impact note. So, yes, and I think it'll meet up at maybe the next stop.
Thank you.
Okay, any other discussion then? And the chair renews her motion that House File 1954 be recommended to pass and move on to taxes. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Oh, sorry. Opposed, same sign.
No.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Downey. Oh. We saw where my preferences lied. Okay, House File 2320. And this bill will move to General Register. Representative Hilty.
Good morning, Madam
Chair. Good morning, Representative. And tell us about your bill.
Madam Chair, House File 2320 was a request brought to me from the Carlton County Board of Commissioners. They have had authority to levy for the upkeep of a cemetery in an unorganized township of Sawyer in Carlton County. For reasons that are not clear to me, that authority expired in 2009, and what House File 2320 would do is simply renew their ability to levy for the upkeep of the cemetery.
Right. Are there questions? Okay. Seeing none, the chair renews her motion that House File 2320 be recommended to pass and move to the General Register. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Same sign, opposed. Motion prevails. All right, thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Chair, members.
And next, House File 2420. And next, House File 2424. Representative Mullery. doesn't look quite as simple as the last one.
This is even simpler.
Okay. All right, and I'll move House File 2424.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Minneapolis in about 5 years suffered over 12,000 foreclosures in the north side, which beforehand only was one-seventh of the city, had over about half of those foreclosures. And we were trying to recover from those with various types of different programs from federal and state. Then on top of that, we got hit with the tornado, which was one of the largest tornado areas hit in state history. So kind of we just kept getting hit by many things, and there's huge amounts of property there that's a problem. And what we're trying to do is reestablish owner-occupied in much of this tornado area so that we can try and stabilize this part of the city. And all this bill does is provide an exemption for up to 50 properties for up to 5 years from taxes. And we have Becky Rahm from Twin Cities Land Bank and Kevin Goodnow from Family Housing Fund. And Madam Chair, they'll explain it in detail.
Very good. Ms. Rahm, you want to introduce yourself for the record?
Yes, Madam Chair. My name is Becky Rahm. I'm president of the Twin Cities Community Land Bank. And thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. The Twin Cities Community Land Bank is a public-private partnership. We're a wholly owned subsidiary of the Family Housing Fund, which is a seven-county-wide organization. Its board is appointed primarily by four units of government that it supports. We're speaking here today about a bill that represents part of the strategy of the City of Minneapolis and Hennepin County for tornado recovery in North Minneapolis. As Representative Mullery has said, prior to May 22nd, the day of the tornado, North Minneapolis was a very vulnerable community. If you look at the PowerPoint that was distributed as part of my remarks, and you look at the map that is immediately after page 7, that's a depiction of North Minneapolis the day before the tornado, and it shows foreclosed and vacant and boarded properties in North Minneapolis. The map on the next page overlays poverty and unemployment. So you had a very vulnerable area of Minneapolis in which a significant amount of public investment was already taking place to rebuild the community and bring back stronger home ownership, and then struck by what is now a federal disaster area by the tornado. The Community Land Bank, in its public-private partnership relationship, offers three services to the community. We're a community lender, so we provide capital for acquisition and reconstruction of property. We work with 67 public and private, nonprofit and for-profit developers. We actually work across 131 cities within the seven-county metro area. We also provide land acquisition services for our 67 developers, and we provide land banking. And this bill is about land banking. Land banking is a tool that's used now throughout the country where there has been a significant loss of population, oftentimes in Rust Belt cities. We use it much more narrowly in the state of Minnesota because we don't have that level of depopulation. The tornado, however, changed things in North Minneapolis because along with the tornado, there was a significant impact to the viability of market forces. And so land banking is now a tool that the Hennepin County and the City of Minneapolis have asked the land bank to deploy. Because we're a public-private partnership, we're able to access private capital. We've raised $2,365,000 of private capital to support rebuilding in the tornado zone. And the public sector role is the program of tax exemption for not more than 5 years, for not more than 50 properties at any one time. Minneapolis and Hennepin counties support this exemption, and both assessor's offices in the county and the city support this exemption. So the role of land banking here is to allow us to acquire damaged and now vacant properties in the tornado zone, hold them until we can find a viable reuse, which would be reconstruction. We require that reconstruction be held to the levels of green community standards, that the homes be sold to owner-occupants, that the owner-occupants of first-buying home buyers receive training, and that they have a financially viable first mortgage loan product. So all kinds of good things to help rebuild North Minneapolis. And I'm available to answer any questions.
All right. Seeing Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Rahm, how are the houses going to be financed for people to buy?
Okay. So we provide acquisition and construction financing to the developers. We work with many of the lenders are involved in this project with us, and we have now deep relationships with them. And, in fact, the tornado recovery is being financed by U.S. Bank, Wells Fargo, Fannie Mae's given us a grant, Bremer Banks Foundation, and so on and so forth. So we work very closely with them on both portfolio and traditional first mortgage loans. In addition, there is now a robust contract for deed program that GMIC and Dayton's Bluff are managing for financing for home buyers.
Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Rahm, are there going to be income guidelines for people to do this, or how does that work?
Yes.
Ms. Rahm?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Representative. When our money is used in rebuilding the buildings, we put an income limit of 115% AMI, which is, in today's dollars, about $96,000 for families, so it cannot exceed that. The houses generally sell for in the $135,000 to $175,000 range, which is well within those income guidelines.
All right. Any other questions? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm just reading the Department of Revenue's sheet in the bottom when it talks about the modifications, when it says that taxes would shift from exempted non-homestead properties to homesteads, resulting in a small changes in property tax refunds by the state. Does that mean that the other properties that are homesteads will have less of a tax refund then in the 5 years that this program will be enacted?
Ms. Rahm.
I'm sorry, I'm just reading this for the first time.
Ms. Schill, have some information here.
Madam Chair and members, and Representative McDonald, yes, that is actually correct. When the property is exempted temporarily, that would temporarily shift responsibility to other properties, and then we would have less of a property tax refund impact. So it would be a negligible, as the revenue estimate says, revenue impact.
Mm-hmm. Representative McDonald?
Madam Chairman, I think that would be important then for the neighborhoods, the residents of the homes to understand this, mm-hmm. and not later blame the legislature yet on another property tax increase. I certainly, if I support this, Representative Mullery, I don't want to be accused by the public in North Minneapolis that I've raised their property taxes like we were last year. So I think before you give my support, Representative, let's see to it that some kind of PR campaign is done that North Minneapolis is helping their fellow neighbors in this time of crises.
Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, I'm sure your sister Jane is fine with this bill. Or not sister, your aunt. Sorry.
My aunt, my dad's sister, who's a sister.
She is a sister.
Very inside your baseball. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mullery, this looks like it's a bill that really affects North Minneapolis and no place else. But yet on page 1, line 11, your board consists of the city, the mayor of St. Paul and 1.13, two members of the city St. Paul City Council. Two questions. What's their role? And have you contacted the city, the mayor and the city council? They're comfortable with this.
Madam Chair and Representative. On the land banks board, we have one St. Paul City Council member, Councilmember Melvin Carter. We have one Ramsey County Commissioner, Commissioner Tony Carter, and the head of PED, Cecile Bedore, is on our board. And so they are all have all voted in their capacity on our on the land banks board in support of this. On the Family Housing Fund, there are four St. Paul representatives appointed by the mayor, and they're all in support of this. The mayor of St. Paul is aware of this.
All right. Any other discussion? Representative Marquardt?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I want to mention that, you know, looking at this type of a situation for disasters, we've done property tax exclusions or exemptions for flood-related disasters also. So, I mean, this very much fits that bill. And, in fact, I think what we did in for the border cities on that is actually the state came in and paid that, so there wasn't a shift. So this isn't even as good as that. I mean, so I mean that was better than this. And so I just think, you know, anytime we have disasters like this, I think these are very, very good and worthwhile programs.
We do have a gentleman, Mr. Dipving, who wishes to testify on behalf of the assessors. Would you come forward, please? And briefly, please introduce yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, my name is Tom Dipping. I'm the Houston County Assessor, and I'm also Vice Chair of the Legislative Committee.
Please proceed.
We certainly support the issue that they have with the blighted community and the tornado and the disaster. The concern we have is in our position statement for 2012, for the legislative session 2012, MAAO believes adjustments to market values, such as limitations on assessors' estimated market values, acquisition values, or deferments or exemptions, creates inequities between taxpayers. Good tax policy treats all taxpayers in a consistent manner, and MAAO opposes classifications or programs that target only a small number of taxpayers. MAAO encourages the continued use of state-administered programs such as the property tax refund program, special targeting refunds, the income tax system, etc., if policymakers wish to grant additional tax relief to certain taxpayers. And obviously, whenever there's been a disaster that's occurred throughout the state, such as down in our area in 08, we had property tax abatements and disaster credits that were given to the property owners, and that came from the state. In this situation where you create an exemption, the exemption or that value that's exempted from the properties are being shouldered by the rest of the taxpayers in that area or that jurisdiction. And that's, I guess that's our concern. The basis for tax exemptions is the accomplishment of public purposes and not favoring a particular persons or corporations at the expense of taxpayers. We had a property tax working group last Friday, and we went over property tax exemptions, exclusions, credits, and aids, and we had a five-page printout with 16 lines to the printout of the exclusions and credits and aids and exemptions in the state of Minnesota. And the idea behind the property tax working group is to try to simplify the system. So although we agree with the issues that go on in the area, we look at possibly doing it from a different standpoint rather than doing it from an exemption and spreading it amongst the taxpayers in that area. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Dipping. And I don't know if Mr. Goodnow, did you have some final comments to make?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Goodnow. I'm here on behalf of the Family Housing Fund and just want to be on record in support of this. The Family Housing Fund is a nonprofit organization that supports sustainable, affordable, and safe housing. We work through private and public partnerships, and this fits this model. Just want to make one note with regard to this legislation. This is allowing the land bank to take properties that are blighted, that for the most part are not paying taxes, they're in foreclosure. The shift to other property taxpayers is minimal, if at all, because the taxes aren't being paid. And it's not benefiting a specific taxpayer. It's benefiting that neighborhood in the city of Minneapolis and those neighborhoods and stabilizing those neighborhoods. And the whole idea here is to allow these properties in those neighborhoods to be stabilized, get them back on the tax rolls, so you can avoid those shifts that are taking place within those neighborhoods. So the Family Housing Fund strongly supports this legislation.
Thank you. Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank Representative Mullery for bringing this bill forward and his testifiers. As a representative and a resident of the North Metro area, we also have a very vested interest in keeping that North Minneapolis area strong, and whatever happens to you has a ripple effect to our communities. And so I just can't tell you enough how much I appreciate this bill. And in my opinion, it actually addresses the tornado issue and a lot of the foreclosure issues that you have been hit very hard with, and also has a ripple effect to our communities. And the one, Madam Chair, if I may, just one comment about the property tax work group. We did talk about all the different exemptions and that type of stuff, but on the other hand, we strongly acknowledged, I felt like, that there is a category that deserves special treatment, and that is disasters. And so I would say that this definitely qualifies for it. And since I'm leaving, I just want to point out to the members the property tax benchmarks sheet. It actually, in equity, is neutral. And so I don't think that there is a positive or a negative effect in vertical or horizontal equity. But it does decrease the simplicity of the system slightly. But there are certain times in your life when you have to trade complexity for a solution. So I want to thank you, Representative Mullery. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Seeing no further discussion, the Chair renews her motion that House File 2424 be passed and referred to the Tax Committee. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you. And our last bill here is House File 2927, Representative Portman. Welcome to the committee, Representative.
Madam Chair, I have two handouts for the page, and I'm hoping that you have two amendments in your packet. I don't know. I have one of them copied, but the other one you should have.
Okay, we have the A-12-0805.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would need somebody on this committee to move the bill for me.
And I'll move House File 2927 for you. And you want to discuss the amendment now then, too?
I can
move.
Sure. Did you say you have the A-12-805?
Yes.
This amendment is to take out the Metropolitan Council. When this bill was drafted, for some reason, the reviser thought I wanted it to apply to both the Three Rivers Park District and Metropolitan Council. I never intended for it to apply to Metropolitan Council. It was just a drafting error. So this would remove Metropolitan Council from my legislation.
Okay. Apparently we don't all have copies, so why don't you go ahead and first explain the bill, and then we'll take up the amendment as soon as we have it.
Sure.
The copies.
And I have copies right here in case. So nobody needs to go make them. And you should have another amendment, too. Madam Chair, members of the committee, this bill, what I requested to have drafted, was to require that the Three Rivers Park District only spend Hennepin County property taxpayers' money on assets in Hennepin County or that benefit Hennepin County residents. And this came to my attention as an issue in December. The Three Rivers Park District, which is Hennepin County Parks, just operates under the name of Three Rivers Park District, had a hearing and determined to spend almost $1 million supporting park facilities in Scott County. We also own very nice park facilities in Representative Knuth's district. Representative Knuth does not represent any of Hennepin County. There's a very, very beautiful zero runoff parking lot and environmentally sound building. I just don't know why the property taxpayers of Hennepin County are paying for it. I've driven through Scott County. I don't know that I've ever been in Scott County for more than 30 minutes, and so I don't know why my property tax dollars are paying for that that amenity in that community. I understand that the Three Rivers Park District has indicated that my bill as written would prevent them from funding the repair and maintenance of the Coon Rapids Dam. So that's the second amendment you should have somewhere, which makes clear that the Coon Rapids Dam, that they shall continue to repair, maintain, and operate that. The Coon Rapids Dam crosses the Mississippi River. I represent both sides of it. It starts in Hennepin County and ends in Anoka County. And Three Rivers Park District has owned it since the 1970s. It allows us a lake. If you look at a map of northwest Hennepin County, I challenge you to find anything that looks like a lake. There isn't anything. This portion of the Mississippi River has as many visitors annually as the Mall of America. And people from Hennepin County and Anoka County put their boats in. That's where kids in Anoka County learn how to water ski. And kids in Hennepin County recreate. So the Coon Rapids Dam, you know, crosses the border between two counties. But the Scott County facility, I don't know any explanation for why I should pay for that or the residents in my community. And the Ramsey County facility, I believe it's in St. Anthony. I'm not sure which city it's even in, but it's not in my county, and I'm not interested in paying for it.
All right. Any questions? Representative Barrett?
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question for you is, how much is the tax levied by the Board of Park District Commissioners in Hennepin County, and how much of that tax is being used outside the county currently?
I believe
Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know Court Bolton is here representing Three Rivers Park District, and hopefully he has these numbers a little bit better. I believe it's about $15 million annually, and they just voted to spend $1 million in Scott County.
Okay. Representative Barrett.
So then, Madam Chair, Representative, so would the taxpayers of Hennepin County get a tax break then by that same amount?
Representative Hartman.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Barrett, I don't know because the Three Rivers Park District could just start spending more money on different things. I think there's an issue that we really need to look at in terms of who has oversight of that budget. It's an elected board, but it's almost invisible. When you get to that level on your ballot, that's one of those where you're like, I've never heard of this person. I've never heard of this board. You know, I'll vote for the incumbent. Or there's only one person running. And the meetings are held at a time and a place that most people don't go. So it's kind of this invisible layer of government. And I don't think anybody's really keeping good track of how they're spending the money. I understand they have photographers on staff, more than one. And I think in this economy, we don't need to have parts of the government that are operating as though there's no recession.
Representative Barrett.
Just follow up. That leads into my concern, which is that Hennepin County would now receive a quote-unquote windfall of a certain amount of money, but yet the taxpayers of another county would then have to increase their taxes to make up for the money that they don't no longer receive, causing the parks generally to increase their budgets. And I want to make sure that that wouldn't happen. Can I be assured of that?
Representative Hartman.
Madam Chair, Representative Barrett, I think you were expressing a concern for taxpayers of Anoka County.
Senator Barrett?
Madam Chair, Representative, no, of whichever counties are currently getting Hennepin County's tax levy and would have to make up for that money if it went away. I represent Chisago County, so it doesn't affect me, but I am concerned about all taxpayers.
Representative Hartman?
Madam Chair, Representative Barrett, I think that potentially the Scott County property taxpayers, property taxes could go up, but that's not really my problem. I'm not interested in subsidizing their recreational opportunities in their county.
Sure, Madam Chair. No, I do understand that, and I appreciate that thought. It's a very honest thought. There is another side of it, too, related to all taxpayers, which I think all of us are concerned with.
Members, before we go on, we'll take up the amendment, the A12-0805. Essentially, it's a delete all, then. Is that right? Okay. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The amendment passes. We are still looking for your second amendment, but
well, I can let you know what it is orally, and if somebody would move it for me.
All right, Representative.
The language would be that the board shall continue to repair, maintain, and operate the Coon Rapids Dam, period.
Okay, you want to just repeat that again?
The board shall continue to repair, operate, and maintain the Coon Rapids Dam.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hartman. I don't understand why the Coon Rapids Dam would cost wouldn't be split between the two counties. You said it you know, breaches from Anoka County, it ends in an Anoka County recreational area, and it seems to me that the theory behind your bill ought to be honored here as well, and that the Hennepin County taxpayers shouldn't pick up the full cost of an amenity for the Anoka County side as well. And so I will be voting against your amendment because I don't think it's consistent with the philosophy that you're exhibiting here, and I support.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hartman, does Anoka County contribute any, does their park board, their park commission, contribute any money to the maintenance or the operation of the Coon Rapids Dam?
Representative Hortman.
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, yes, they do. There was a sale agreement in the 70s where Three Rivers Park District purchased the Coon Rapids Dam, and they're the title owner of it. And under that agreement, Anoka County provides a certain amount of money a year that it goes into a fund for repair and maintenance of the dam. But Three Rivers Park District isn't required, to my understanding, to account to Anoka County of how they're spending the money. And in recent years, the state of Minnesota has paid for almost all of the repair and maintenance costs related to the dam.
Representative Mahoney?
Representative Mahoney, we're paying for the new one.
Representative Mahoney.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And then why is are you telling me that Ramsey County taxpayers are paying for the Anoka for Ramsey County, for Coon Rapids Dam and the Hennepin County Parks and the Anoka County Park kind of maintenance?
Representative Hortman.
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, last year in the bonding bill in July, we approved $16.5 million for the Coon Rapids Dam as an Asian carp barrier. And an important Asian carp barrier protecting both the Mille Lacs watershed and the Rum River watershed.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't have a question on this particular amendment.
Okay.
But if I could.
Representative Chesky.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hartman, I'm with Representative Loeffler on this. You know, the Three Rivers Park area should not have any accounting toward Anoka on this. I mean, it's their money. They don't owe Anoka an explanation of how they're spending it. So I understand your position, and I think probably others in this room who are represent part of that area. But members, you know, separately, this bill I think is great. You know, this is ridiculous. We have a taxing district, Three Rivers Park, that's wholly contained in Hennepin, that's spending money to acquire lands in other counties and raising all of our taxes to do so. And so the overarching view of the bill, I think, is great. I do think this little carve-out for Anoka is something that should be rejected, and I just want to support Representative Loeffler on that.
Okay. Representative McDonald?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I had a question, but not on this amendment, so just if you'd keep
okay.
My name on the list.
On the amendment?
Yes.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is this arrangement between Anoka and Hennepin County for the Coon Rapids Dam a shared services arrangement? I mean, that the two counties contribute, do they contribute equally? And was a decision made that the Three Rivers Park Board would be the ones who would be contracted to do the maintenance? Is that the arrangement?
Representative Hortman.
Madam Chair, and again, Court Holton is here, and I'm sure he knows these facts much better than I do. But there was a sale agreement and a contract between Anoka County, I believe, or NSP, and the Three Rivers Park District that included Anoka County. And under the contractual agreement, Anoka County pays a certain amount annually to Three Rivers Park District to contribute to the maintenance. Mm-hmm. So they are contributing to the maintenance of the dam. The state paid for about $5.5 million worth of repairs in 05-06, and the state will be paying for $16.5 million. But under the contract for sale for the dam and the lease agreement, Anoka County is paying.
Right. On the oral amendment, then, any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
Motion does not prevail. All right, to the bill. Any further questions?
Division.
Oh, division. Okay. CLA will. Division. We're just going to vote. Okay. All in favor of the oral amendment, signify. Raise your hand. Okay, the motion prevails. All right. To the bill. Any further discussion on the bill itself? Any other folks that wish to testify? Okay, we've got Benson, Representative Benson, Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Real quick question. I'm just curious about the acquisition of lands beyond Hennepin County. Is the Three Rivers District doing this? Is there a logic behind it that that the lands that are adjacent to Hennepin County Park area are impacting preservation of land or something like that? You know, the watershed pollutants coming down a stream into one of the Hennepin County parks, is that the reason that the Three Rivers District is purchasing territory or lands outside of Hennepin County? What's the what is the reason that they're doing it?
Representative Portman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Benson, I can't imagine what the reason is, but I figured that Three Rivers Park District must have some explanation, and if I put in the bill that maybe I would find out.
Okay. We do have some folks that wish to testify. Do you want to make your comment first, Representative?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. It's just to that point. I mean, I think originally Three Rivers was known as the Suburban Hennepin Parks District. It was actually originally the Hennepin Parks District, and then they had to acknowledge the fact that they only were working in the suburbs. And then I think that surrounding collar counties, as they developed, said, you know, you've got this great experience in doing trails and doing all this stuff, and I don't have any problem if the neighbors contract with them and fully pay their costs. But I think what we found is a system in which they've forgotten their base, and it's really being run now as a metropolitan or a multi-county system. And I know when they were going to develop the only park that was accessible to my residents, because it actually you can get to it by bus, Silverwood, you know, the planners were really rejecting the idea of what the community wanted, which is we wanted naturalist discussions and all these things. They were kind of originally saying, oh, we've already got that in these other parks. And it's like, yeah, if you can, you've got a car and you can drive for 45 minutes. And so I think they've gotten pretty big. And I think this just kind of says, you spend the money where it's raised, and you can still contract out with others, but then the others you contract with have to pay the full bill. And I think that's a fair allocation of tax dollars.
Okay, Representative McDonald, and then we do want to hear from a couple of testifiers.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Representative Portman, what does the dollar amount that is now captured by the Park District in Hennepin County and then now goes out to other counties?
Madam Chair,
Representative Portman.
Representative McDonald, I think it's about $1 million that they just approved to spend in other counties. And that's just the Scott County deficit. That doesn't count whatever they spent building that very beautiful facility in Representative Canoe's district, which I can only imagine was kind of expensive.
Okay. Health and Human Services, I'll just make an announcement, has moved to room 5, so we may have some folks for that meeting. Did you have a follow-up, Representative?
I'm sorry, Madam Chairman. My apologies for interrupting you. I did have a follow-up, if that's
okay. Go ahead.
Appropriate. Representative Hortman, I was wondering if you would offer an amendment for me where under perhaps 1.7 after county, delete the period and insert comma and say whatever the dollar amount, if it's $1 million or two, that the Three Rivers Park currently doesn't use, the park board shall reduce the levy by that amount in the following year. And my thoughts on that is if the park board right now is not using that money, they're used to their budget, I think that money should go back then to the taxpayers, to the residents. Since the Three Rivers Park is already not using it, it would be just an extra million or two that they could use, free money, some would say. But I think that would be fair. Would you accept that oral amendment?
Madam Chair, I was getting a copy of the bill while you were giving your oral amendment, so if you could repeat it.
Representative McDonald, you want to repeat it then?
Thank you, Madam Chairman, yes. On 1.7, after county, delete period, right. Insert comma, and add whatever the dollar amount the Three Rivers Park currently doesn't use, the Park Board shall reduce their levy by that amount.
Are you offering that amendment, Representative McDonald?
Yes.
Okay.
Of course, Madam Chairman, I might need some help in the nomenclature, of course.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hortman.
I would be happy to work with Representative McDonald on the concept and the language. I think it would be a little bit difficult for us to figure out. We would need a lot of their paperwork to figure out which portions of our money is subsidizing activities. I just don't want it to continue in the future.
All right. Representative McDonald, would you consider withdrawing the amendment and working with the representative?
Madam Chairman, if the representative is amiable to work with me, I certainly will. I do support, I think it's important that those who paid the tax, the levy, in Hamilton County should keep that. This is part of a fiscal disparity that we often get, but if you are willing to work with me, I'll withdraw my oral amendment.
And representative, would you just officially withdraw it for us?
I will officially withdraw it, and I look forward to working with the representative after this meeting.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Marquardt?
Madam Chair, before we hear any more amendments, I'm not a Hennepin County resident, and we've got a lot of history here. I'd like to hear from the Three River Park District before I hear any more amendments or anything else, because I just don't have the full story. I mean, what we're hearing here doesn't sound quite right, but I just would like to hear the full story before I vote on anything more, if we could.
Very good. Sir, would you introduce yourself for the record, please, and tell us who you represent?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Chris Gears. I'm the superintendent of Three Rivers Park District, and I'm here this morning representing the Park District's Board of Commissioners. I have some prepared comments, so if you'd give me a little moment. The Park District believes that this bill would have a significant negative impact not only on our ability to manage the Three Rivers system, but could also adversely impact the entire metropolitan regional park system. In order to better explain our position, it might be helpful to understand a bit of the Park District's history. With the support and encouragement of visionary civic leaders bearing legendary family names, Pillsbury, McKnight, Crosby, and Dayton, the Park District, now known as Three Rivers, was established by the legislature in 1955. In its enabling legislation, the Park District was envisioned as a multi-county entity created to provide regional park services and the protection of natural resources. Three Rivers is the only park district in the state of Minnesota and, by legislative design, is not comparable to any other single-county park system. In 1974, the legislature established the Metropolitan Regional Park System, comprised of 10 implementing agencies, including three cities, six counties, and the Park District. The facilities within the regional system serve more than just a local audience, and they function as state park equivalents in the metropolitan area. Because of this, all 10 of the implementing agencies receive financial support from both the Metropolitan Council and the state of Minnesota. So yes, we are all paying for all of these parks everywhere throughout the metropolitan area. With that history in mind, we're wondering if this bill is really intended to ensure that local tax dollars are spent only to support programs and facilities that can be enjoyed by local taxpayers. If, in fact, that is the intent, then that notion warrants further consideration, and it raises a whole host of questions. Picture for a minute the Minneapolis chain of lakes. Should the city and the Minneapolis Park Board restrict access to the chain of lakes to only those people who pay taxes in Minneapolis? Should St. Paul prohibit the people who don't live within the city limits from enjoying a pleasant afternoon at Como Park's Zoo and Conservatory? Should Carver Park be closed if Carver County is unable to adjust its annual budget to provide operating funds to keep the gates open? Carver County is providing the 2,500 acres of land that are used by people not just in Carver County, but more than 50% of that use comes from people in Hennepin County. And what about ID of park users? Would we actually have to establish a system where we would identify where the users came from and how much of the money appropriated for the use of those parks should be attributed to the local agency? If, on the other hand, this bill is intended simply to decrease spending by the Park District, we're already there, and in fact, we have reduced our operating levy every year since 2009. In fact, last year, the district reduced its levy by more than $800,000 and cut staffing levels by 5%. Yet, according to Met Council estimates, visitation to our parks and trails has grown by nearly 60% since 2005 and now exceeds 8 million visitors annually. Essentially, the Park District is attempting to meet ever-increasing demands for service by doing more and more with less and less. If passed, this bill would negatively impact several of the Park District's mutually beneficial partnerships with other government agencies that have evolved to create more efficient and less expensive government. I have three quick examples for you. We've referenced Scott County, but I think it would be helpful for you to understand a little bit of the background with the Scott County arrangement. This dates back to the mid-1970s when Scott County and Hennepin County agreed to preserve major chunks of natural resource land in Scott County, including the 2,600-acre Murphy-Hanrahan Park Reserve. That relationship has evolved to the point where we have now been able to jointly provide park services in Scott County without creating a separate county park department. The park users of Scott County pay, along with the county government, 90% of the cost of operating those parks. The taxpayers of Hennepin County pay approximately 8% of the cost of operating those parks, and yet nearly 15% of the visits to those parks come from Hennepin County. We do not subsidize Scott County parks at $1 million a year. Another partnership example: when asked by other local government agencies that were unable to muster the necessary resources, Three Rivers stepped in to acquire and develop a regional park on Silver Lake in the city of St. Anthony, which is bisected by two counties, Ramsey and Hennepin. Prior to initiating this project, the Park District was assured that, over time, it would be reimbursed by the Metropolitan Council for acquisition and development costs. In the meantime, the Park District, with its AAA bond rating, issued bonds in good faith to cover the initial costs. If this bill passes, who will continue making debt payments? And how will a potential default on bond payments affect the Park District's AAA rating? A third partnership, which was...
We all have to ask you to try to wrap it up.
I'm just about there. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
The third relationship, which was referenced, is our recent partnership with the DNR regarding the Coon Rapids Dam. The state is funding the improvements. The Park District has made a 50-year commitment to continue its operation of the dam. Anoka County is no longer, I repeat, no longer paying any money to the Park District for operations and maintenance. That agreement has terminated, and the operation cost is entirely being borne at this point by the residents and taxpayers of Hennepin County. In my closing, obviously, the passage of this bill would impact the public and would likely mean shutting down some facilities. The Park District at this time has not received complaints from our constituents. The philosophical underpinnings of this bill actually fly in the face of the visionary decisions that shaped the future of the regional park system more than 50 years ago. However, if this committee determines that this bill should go forward, we believe that at a minimum, it must include some type of transition plan that would involve the Metropolitan Council, the other 9 regional park implementing agencies, and other potential stakeholders for facilities that would be impacted. Thank you for your time, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Gears. Other questions? Or
Madam Chair, just a brief response. My bill is very limited. I'm only talking about the property tax revenue of Hennepin County residents being spent in Hennepin County. I know there are several other streams of revenue that accrue to the Three Rivers Park District, including money under the legacy funds and other general fund dollars. I'm really concerned about the property tax levy, that portion of their budget being spent in Hennepin County.
Are there other questions or comments? Representative Loeffler?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I think that the superintendent has confused a bunch of different funding streams together, and that we do have regional parks that are acknowledged in state law as serving people who live outside their borders, and as a result, they get Metro Parks and open space money, they get money through the legacy funds and other streams. But the underlying initial land acquisition and operating costs come generally from property taxes, and the additional money that comes for being a regional park is to help offset that extra burden of serving a broader clientele. The Hennepin, the Minneapolis chain of lakes and the other regional parks were paid for with Minneapolis property tax dollars, and their operations are subsidized with Minneapolis property tax dollars. We're glad to receive Metro Open Space and Parks money, just like the St. Paul Parks, just like the suburban parks, to deal with that overburden issue. But the property taxes that are raised within that community should stay within that community. And it's unfortunate that you and your board, over time, decided to use Hennepin County dollars to give a good deal to other surrounding communities instead of asking them to pay their fair share of the acquisition and the operating costs. And that's all this bill asks for.
Representative Lemchesky.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to support Representative Portman's bill and what Representative Loeffler just said, in that, you know, it may have been envisioned in 1955 to be a metro-wide park system, but that's not what the law is as it relates to the property tax levy. Representative Portman's right. The law is the only people who pay the property tax for Three Rivers Park are the people who reside in Hennepin County. So whether someone envisioned that someday somebody else should, if they all start chipping in, I don't think we need this bill, but they're not. And there are these other pots of money, just like rural members get money from Legacy and the other things that are going on in the bonding bill. Representative Hortman's bill is specifically about the property tax levy that happens only on the people who reside in Hennepin. And, you know, to the fact that some folks, constituents, might not be complaining, they don't know. I mean, if you went and said, hey, you know what, I'm raising property taxes on you here in Minnetonka or Minneapolis or Bloomington or represent the Speaker's District, or, you know, which is where this is all coming from, you know, Sarah Anderson or Keith Downey, or, you know, and oh, by the way, some of it's going to a different place. I think the constituents would be outraged. Members should know that this board isn't, it has some elected folks and some appointed folks, and this is the kind of thing that I think we'll see over time. If the law, if people continue to do this, the folks who are running are going to lose their elections. They're supposed to represent the people of Hennepin who are paying the property taxes, and they're not supposed to be giving the money elsewhere. Madam Chair, there are these arguments that were just made about, you know, this portion is paying here, but these many users are there. You know, it isn't, it may be the case that Three Rivers Park has reduced the levy, but the spending has gone up. The base is growing dramatically, and now we're exporting it to folks who aren't paying it. So, you know, I think if any one of you here asked yourself if this was happening to you, how you'd feel about it. Let's say Representative Mahoney's constituents were paying a levy, and the money was being sent to represent Marquardt's district to build a park. And Representative Peterson's residents were paying a property tax levy, and that money was being spent over to Representative Crawford's district to build a park. It's a small percentage of the total spending right now. But if you follow what the Three Rivers Park is doing, Madam Chair, they're dreaming up even more of this stuff. The money, and I think with all due respect to Representative Hortman, the amount she raised I don't think is the right amount. I think it's a lot more than a million or two that's already happening. And what's being planned to happen is significantly bigger. So, you know, members, just think about your own districts. Just think how you'd feel, Representative Detmer, if your residents had to pay a local property tax to build a park in Representative McDonald's district. And that's what's going on. Representative Portman's got it exactly right. She's not addressing the other issues, which, by the way, we could do that too. The legacy bill is disproportionately raised in the metro and spent out state. She's not touching that. And she's not talking about all these statewide funding streams of metro open parks. She's talking about the local property tax, and it should be spent in the district it's raised in.
Very good. Seeing no further discussion, the chair renews her motion that House File 2927, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to taxes. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you. Members, we are adjourned.